from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum in this next hour, as part of our In My Experience series, highlighting the personal stories of our listeners, we talk with a panel of people who are adopted. And we'll hear about their process in searching for their identity, and in some cases, looking for and meeting their birth parents, and we'll hear the experiences of you, our listeners. Forum is next, right after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Welcome to another hour of our Forum program. And in this hour, we continue our In My Experience series as we talk with a panel of people who are adopted, and talk with them about the ways in which being adopted has shaped their experiences, their identities, and their lives. And they all have different stories to tell. Joining us in studio, let me tell you who is with us. Laura Callan was born in 1969 and adopted, reunited with her birth mother and father when she was 32, and her birth mother now lives nearby and is very much a part of her life. Welcome, Laura Callan.
Thank you.
We also have with us Sean Ramsey, who was born in 1971 and adopted, later found his birth mother and father, and now has a relationship with both of them. Sean Ramsey, good morning.
Good morning.
Glad to have you with us. Also, Janelle McCormick is here with us in studio. She was born in Vietnam in 1973, was adopted by a Caucasian family 13 months later. Has no information on her birth parents.
Good morning.
Well, good morning. Glad to have you with us. Sarah Bernard is also here. She was born in 1979 and adopted. Later searched for her birth mother, found she had recently died. Glad to have you.
Thank you.
Sarah Bernard, thank you for being with us as well. So let's begin, if we may, with Laura Callan and find out your story, which came from a closed adoption. I mean, closed adoptions are pretty much gone and by the wayside, but here you were, I guess, 5 years old when you were first told you were adopted?
That's right. So I was born in 69, and my parents told me when I was five that I was adopted. And I have a really vivid memory of that because I have an older brother, 2 years older than I am, and he was adopted as well from a different family. And I realized, reflecting back on this, that they chose that time to talk to us about this because my younger brother was going to be coming home. He was also adopted from a different family. So we were told, and for me, I didn't really think very consciously about being adopted until much later when I was about 28 and then decided to do a search as an adult.
Well, that was after a broken engagement that you decided to do a search?
That's right. I was engaged to be married, and there was about, you know, a year of planning a wedding. And as the months went by and it got closer to the wedding date, I felt increasingly uncomfortable with the idea of getting
married. You were sort of a runaway bride? Or?
in a sense. And I didn't really understand why I was feeling so uncomfortable with this notion of being married. And in the end, I just really felt like I couldn't go through with this. And as a result of deciding to break my engagement is when I really first decided to think deeply about what adoption meant to me and if it had some impact on this decision in my relationship. And what I've come to believe about that experience is that my choosing to be engaged and become married was really the closest relationship that I had ever had, you know, as an adult, you know, apart from my parents and my family. And the thought of being so deeply attached to another person was just really terrifying to me. And in my mind, to become married, to become so attached, would ultimately mean in some way that I would be left.
Abandonment, which is, of course, a fear of so many who are adopted. And we can talk about that later on in some depth, I hope. But what struck me about your family history was people would say you look like your mother, and she would not say anything about adoption, and your mother would be in church, and somebody would say to her, "I remember when you were pregnant." Of course, she was never pregnant. There was a kind of facade, really, then, I guess.
That's right. And because I was told when I was five, I had this intellectual notion of being adopted, that there's the fact of being adopted and knowing that I was not biologically connected to this family, but then my parents really just wanting to have this normal family. And so there were these moments, you know, I think over the years of a story that my family was telling that didn't quite match up with what I actually knew. And that did, like I said, sort of unfold over many years.
But you met your biological parents, a psychiatrist and an artist. Do I have that right?
That's right.
And have a very close relationship with your biological mother now. I guess you call her Terry and you call the mother that adopted you mom.
That's right.
Because she's your mom, right?
That's
Terry,
right.
But Terry is what? Close friend? Biological mother?
That's a great question. I don't know if I'll ever really have an answer for that for myself, because the nature of my relationship with Terry is really unlike anything that I've known. And it's really, there's no model out there for it, you know, in our society and in our culture. How you navigate through that relationship, how you explain it to yourself and to other people. And it did matter to me a lot that I called the parents who adopted and raised me my mother and my father.
You didn't feel, though, with the biological mother, she abandoned me? And, I mean, you hear this sort of thing all the time from young people who are adopted. Steve Jobs didn't even want to meet, you know, his biological father, for example.
Right. And, again, it wasn't until, you know, this really devastating event happened in my life in breaking the engagement and not understanding what caused that internally, that I decided I wanted to understand this part of myself. And after meeting Terry and also my birth father, you know, it's been years and it still goes on today, you know, where I wrestle with a whole mix of feelings about it.
What about your feelings toward your biological mother? I mean, with her pregnancy, things changed, didn't they?
That's right. You know, I was really blessed in meeting Terry in lots of ways, and one of which is that after being an artist, she went back to school and became a behavioral therapist. And from the very beginning, Terry would often talk to me about the idea that at some point you will feel angry. And when you do, let's talk about that, and it's okay for you to feel that way. And I, for many years, just thought, I don't feel angry. I don't have that emotion about this. I understand why it happened. I'm good with it. And it really wasn't until I was pregnant with my first child that I really had the first feeling of anger. And I remember driving to the airport to pick Terry up. She was coming to visit. And my husband was with me. And I said, I don't know what's going on, but I don't know that I can do this. I feel really, really angry. I don't think I want to see her. I don't think I want to talk to her. And again, processing that later and looking back on it, I think it was the first time that I could really be in touch with what it might mean to be pregnant, to be carrying a child, and the idea that I would relinquish my own child. So it's through these sort of lived experiences, and through coming in contact with that other person, that I've had this opportunity to sit with it and figure it out and feel some of these feelings.
And Laura Callan here with us in studio, reunited with her birth mother and father when she was 12. And as I said earlier, her birth mother now lives nearby and is very much a part of her life. Janelle McCormick never had the advantage of meeting any of her birth parents, and no information about your birth parents at all.
Correct.
But let's talk about your story. I mean, there's a lot of concern for many people who have gone through adoption, feeling this sense of abandonment and anger. And you never experienced much of that at all, did you?
Well, I went through a period in middle school that I wouldn't be separated from my mom. But we kind of worked through that. Beyond that, I think that my sister is also adopted, and we're very biracial. Our parents are white. My sister is black. I'm half Vietnamese. So we always knew that we were adopted because we don't look like anybody in Erie, Pennsylvania. That is for sure. So my parents always explained to us that you're adopted. Someone else gave birth to you but wanted you to have a better family, wanted you to have a better life. So I don't think either one of us really looked at it as a bad thing. This past year, I went to Vietnam, and I quite honestly don't know how I would have ever survived being there, growing up there. We went to the town where I was born. It's a beautiful place. it would have been my life versus what my life would have been. There are obviously 180 degrees difference. So in many ways, I'm very grateful.
But people continue to ask, what are you? Because they
constantly
see with a biracial sister and parents who are Caucasian. And
yep.
So there's always that curiosity. And how do you respond generally? Just give them the facts or?
No, I make them work for it.
Oh, okay. there is a desire in you, though, to find out if, for example, the information were somehow accessible, your
yes.
biological parents?
It stays if I could with find you? Out, yeah. If I could find out, I would find that very interesting. But there are zero records. She left me at an orphanage, said she would return the next day with the father's name and papers so I could be legally adopted, and she never returned. So I think that if there would be a way to find out, I would be curious, but because there isn't, who they are or were as people doesn't impact who I am today. That's who my parents are today.
The father was an American soldier, though. You know that?
We assumed that he was Caucasian, but he could have been from many other countries that were in that area during the war.
So talk about your relationship with your adoptive parents. I mean, essentially, they're your parents and
absolutely
love them and they love you.
Absolutely.
It's been good?
Yes, yes. We're as normal as one can be. You know, I can fight with my sister. I got along well for the most part with my parents. They were just here for a visit. They live in Pennsylvania still. I have a really normal, it was a normal childhood. It was a normal upbringing. Just the fact that we looked really different was the only stigma to being adopted. I think that if we had all been white, it would have been very different because no one would have ever questioned, what are you? How are you here? Why don't you look like your sister?
What was the stigma? I mean, explain that to us.
From kids in school, I grew up in a smallish town in Pennsylvania and everybody looks the same. So I remember one year in high school, my sister and I were in the same gym class and she's a grade ahead of me. And a girl came up to me and she said, you know, there's a black girl here that has your last name. And I said, yeah, that's my sister. And she said to me, do you know she's black? And I said, yeah, that's my sister. So I think that if you grow up in an area that people aren't used to that type of thing, I tease my parents about being the original Brad and Angelina. There's always a lot of questions. And when you're a young person, you don't necessarily have the couth to ask something beyond, what are you? Or did you know your sister's black?
It gets even more confusing when you have a name like McCormick, though.
Yes,
I think
exactly.
You're from the old sod or something.
Exactly.
I mean, Irish ancestry. Janelle McCormick again with us in studio. And so is Sean Ramsey. And Sean Ramsey, let's talk about your experience. You had one of those crises, like we heard from Laura Callan, about age 25.
That's right. My story is a lot like Laura, where I was kind of stuck in a rut, and then I had a life-changing kind of experience where I got in a little bit of trouble. And then, you know, before that, it never really occurred to me to explore my adoption past and roots. And after that event, I just decided that it was in my best interest to look into my, you know, true history. And in very short order, within a couple months, I was reunited with pretty much and met every blood relative still living at that time.
And were embraced and warmly accepted.
Very much so. Very much so.
And that bothered your adopted parents, I mean, your mother specifically.
Yes, my birth mother, I mean, my adopted mother, she took it as she took it personally. She thought I did it because I didn't love her anymore. And it took many years for her to and, you know, many conversations to let her know, you know, it was about me. And it's not, I don't feel any different about her, but, you know, I loved her just the same. But, you know, I needed to do this for myself. And eventually she came around and she's very much happy with my very, very extended family.
Sounds like she was difficult, though.
Yeah. She apologized for every time she punished me when she had a serious issue. She thought I was just going to leave her behind, and she
had fear of abandonment.
She did. She yeah. did. She had a lot of fear about what I was going to do, and she just didn't really really took it personal. She really thought I was doing it to spite her somehow, or you know,
which of course had nothing to do with it, of
right?
Course.
Of course,
but, you know, when Janelle was talking about going to Vietnam and saying I couldn't have lived like this, you found your birth parents. I want to find out your reaction to them. And sort of said, God, I could have been a Dodger fan if this had worked out.
That's very true.
pretty funny.
Oh, yeah. Well, my maternal grandfather actually sold Dodger dogs at Dodger Stadium, and the whole family of Dodger fans. And in fact, my birth aunt lives next to one of the Dodger managers, is very close to one of the ex-managers, and is very close to the Dodger family or the Dodger franchise. So,
didn't you also find out where you were conceived? I mean, in this odyssey
yes,
of yours.
Yes, that's part of the sense of humor that I share with my the nature part of the sense of humor I share with my birth family. And when I went down to my maternal grandparents' house, we went for a walk around the area in West Covina, and my birth mother said, "This is it. This is where it was. We were just walking down the street, and after a you know, after an evening of In-N-Out Burger and in the back of a Volkswagen, I was conceived." So,
what about that moment when you met your birth parents? Can you recapitulate that for us?
In person, when I met my birth mother and father, both it was a connection in not just you know in like when I met my birth mother, I recognized her voice. I recognize a picture when she first sent me a picture of her as an 18-year-old. I was like, I know she looks very familiar to me. And when I heard her on the phone, I recognized her voice. And when I met her in person, it was just an instant connection. It was like an unspoken. It was just a feeling I'd never felt with anybody before. And same with my birth father, same sense of humor, same catchphrases, same. Sweet tooth, just you know, it's just so many things I share with them that I never found, and that I just don't have anything in common in these areas with my adopted family, and to have these instant connections with
makes you believe a lot in nature more than nurture.
Absolutely,
yeah. Genetics. Was that your experience too, Laura? Just
my experience of meeting Terry, my birth mother, was similar in that there was a feeling of, I know this person, and I've always known this person in some way, and how could that be? So I share that sense of it, and there are many ways in which I'm very much like Terry, you know, in our tastes and our preferences and the way that we use our hands to talk. And
as you're doing now. Yes.
Exactly. and a physical resemblance as well.
And Sean, you've been somewhat fearful about becoming an accidental father. That's an understatement, in fact, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's always been sort of, you know, underlying, you know, in my relationships. And it's just something that, you know, the experience of being an accident or, you know, whatever label you want to say, a conception that's unintended, I didn't want that to happen to someone else just because there's already enough issues just being born. You know, I don't want to pile things on and make, you know, the experience, you know, is different for everybody and not everybody comes out sort of on the top side. So I just was very careful. Don't want to have any accidental kids.
Let me bring in Sarah Burnett here on this because we're talking, of course, about adoption and so many different dimensions of it, also the impact on your life as adults. And it's affected you to the point where you don't want to have children.
Yep.
Tell us why.
Well, some people say I'm still young, I might still want to, but I am 33. Most people I know want to have kids by this point as women, if they want to have them at all. But I feel as though there's a lot of conscientiousness that is absent from the desire to have children. I guess I perceive having children as being somewhat of a selfish act, and that a lot of people do it as they feel as though it's just a God-given right to go ahead and reproduce any old time they want without considering the child and its future and, you know, many things.
When you say God-given right, I would like to hear your story. It goes back to you being told you were special and you were from God and all that, but mm-hmm. Then you find out you're adopted and it makes a difference, huh?
Yeah, it definitely makes a difference. I mean, I guess I was pretty self-aware as a child early on because it hit me when I was very young that someone had left me behind. And I mean, I even remember where I was and I was writing it in a journal, you know, at the time. Someone didn't want me. Someone does want me, but it wasn't the part. There's this whole mystery being. And I guess I had kind of an overactive imagination and I read a lot. And so, you know, this became a story, my story for myself. Like, what is this past, this?
Well, you went searching for your biological mother.
I did.
And found out that she had died.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty young, in fact, from, was she a heavy smoker?
She smoked 3 packs a day for her whole life, 2 packs a day while I was in the womb. Died when, I know.
You seem not to have been affected by it, yeah.
She died at the age of 46 of small cell lung cancer. She went to the doctor thinking she had some kind of cold, and he gave her 2 weeks to live. She lived 6 weeks from that point, but died very quickly.
Talk about your relationship with the parents that adopted you, because you have a sister, I mean, who was born naturally.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't think they could conceive, and then your sister was born, what, about 9 months after you were adopted?
Yeah, she was born on Christmas Day. I was born March 31st, so that's a little less than 9 months. So we grew up side by side.
And grew up equally loved?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And to this, you have a close relationship with her?
We're not super tight or anything like that, but, you know, we are friends.
But there was never any feeling of distinction. This is the biological kid. This is the adopted kid.
I didn't feel as though we were treated any differently.
But you felt different, though.
I was very different. It was evident in everything. I also grew up very Christian, so that also played a part of this. But I, from a very young age, just interested in art and music, and that was the sort of thing that was either considered evil or an abomination. Or, you know, very restricted, but also there wasn't any interest in it in my entire family, extended family included.
So it's a bit liberating when you found out your mother may have been somewhat artistic.
She was very artistic and into theater and all these things.
And you also found out she was bipolar, though. I mean,
that was something that
you?
Stood out. Well, I at one point in my youth was diagnosed as bipolar, but nothing ever came of that. And I've made steps to deal with any kind of depressive elements in my life immediately.
But you've described your adoption as being world-shattering. Why do you use that language?
Well, the adoption itself was world-shattering.
Well, growing up as an adopted child,
It's so different, I think, for people. Than Janelle, for example. She doesn't look like her family. She has something she can kind of put her finger on. Oh, I'm different, and I see this like difference. When you are all a white family and you all look sort of the same, but there's something inside of you that's screaming, I'm not like these people.
On that note, let me give out the phone number because I want to invite listeners to join this conversation. And if you're adopted or if you have some thoughts on adoption, if you have questions for any of our guests, feel free to join us. And you can do that now at our toll-free number. It's 866-733-6786. We welcome your involvement in this conversation and your questions and comments. Again, toll-free, 866-733-6786. Or email us, forum@kqed.org. Or post questions or comments on our website by going to kqed.org/forum and click on the segment. Or go to our Facebook page. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny, and as part of Forum's In My Experience series, which highlights the personal stories of our listeners, we're talking with a panel of people who are adopted. Well, here in the hour, as we've heard so far, more about their processes in searching for their identity, in some cases looking for and meeting their birth parents, at least in a couple of cases. And here are the experiences of you, our listeners, as well. With us in studio, Sarah Burnett, Janelle McCormick, Sean Ramsey, and Laura Kellen. And Sarah, I wanted to ask you, before we go to our callers and bring our listeners into this, about the fact that you're very involved politically, pro-choice, pro-euthanasia, and you said you came from a strong Christian background. How did your politics get shaped by, or were they shaped at all by the fact that you were adopted? are adopted.
Yeah, I think I recognize a really strong identification between blood relatives, a sense of obligation. It's something that seems to be so strong that I can identify with that almost I look at people as acting as if they are not in control almost, you know, that they just do as they have always done, as they were taught, as they were raised. I've always questioned tradition and the sort of behavioral patterns that we fall into for, I don't, you know, just because everyone's doing it kind of thing. I don't know why, you know, I feel like you are in control and you can make these decisions. And so as individuals, that's why I feel.
So you believe in agency, really, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's been part of your own quest and part of where you've wound up as a result of being adopted.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's talk to Laura Callan about this because she's been involved in an adoption museum project, which came out of your identity search.
Not directly, but about a year and a half ago, I was thinking about going back to work after taking a break to be with my children. And as I was going through that process, I created a concept, an idea for something that doesn't exist right now, which is a museum about adoption, a place that is dedicated to exploring fully the story of adoption and its relevance to our contemporary culture and society. And it's I'm working on the concept right now and looking for people who are interested in joining me and helping me to make a museum.
Well, you've put the word out here. Would it include, you know, like a gallery of people who are adopted, historical figures who are adopted? There are a lot of them. I mean, you're in good company, all of you, yeah.
There are a lot of historical figures and celebrities and famous people who have some connection to adoption. And, of course, you know, there's a place for that. But I think there's a much bigger picture about the history of adoption, both from a personal experience point of view as well as an institutional point of view, and also the lessons that we can learn from this experience of adoption, and a place and a space for people to share their stories and to connect around their stories, I think, as you're hearing today. Adoption is an incredibly complex experience, and there's a huge spectrum of how people feel about it.
Well, Sean Ramsey, you're a practicing attorney, and did being adopted have anything to do with your career choice or the kind of law you do?
Well, a little bit. Going into law school, I thought I wanted to – one of the rationales was I want to be an adoption attorney, and that has sort of morphed a bit to I do more volunteer work for children and with foster kids. Like I'm a CASA, a court-appointed special advocate for foster youth, and I volunteer with an organization in Santa Rosa called the Children's Village. But I don't do a lot of adoption work yet. My practice is only a few years old in Sebastopol. So my family law cases don't really have a lot of adoptions coming through yet. A few are trickling in, but it's not a bread and butter item that I thought it might have been when I first – my first day of law school, and they said, what do you want to be when you get your bar card? So So juvenile issues are very important to me and sort of my more my volunteer projects and my community service and starting to be some pro bono stuff in there as well, but not as a in my actual work.
That sounds like good activist and community productive work. Janelle McCormick, any real influences to speak of here in terms of your politics or your vocational choices or – from the adoptive experience?
I don't really think so, because when I think about myself, I don't think of myself Janelle McCormick, adopted person. I think of myself as Janelle McCormick, awesome. So I don't always define myself as being adopted.
Good enough. Let's find out what our listeners have to say here to our awesome guests. They're all awesome in their own way. Eloise, good morning.
Good morning. I am 20 years old, and I have known that I was adopted from the day I was born. My birth mother has always been in my life, and I've met her entire family. I have a very close relationship with her sister, my aunt and uncle, my grandfather. And I find it kind of disappointing that more people don't have that experience. And it was really kind of just my birth mother and my parents who continued to facilitate the relationship. And it's when people ask me about my adoption, because I'm very open about it, I always tell them, you know, I have my parents, their mom and dad, but I have a very special relationship with my birth mother. She's not just Amber. She's also my birth mother.
Well, thank you for that, Eloise. In fact, I'm struck by the fact that her experience is very much like Laura's and Sean's, in that the relationship to the birth family and the biological parents is so good. Not everybody has stories like that, as I'm sure both of you are well aware. It's your good fortune that you do, I think. Let me get another caller on here, and we'll go to Walnut Creek. Michael, hi, you're on.
Yes, good morning. Thank you for taking the call. I, too, like the last caller, have known that I was adopted since birth. In fact, I have two sisters. All of us were adopted at birth. And I can relate to different aspects of each of the guest experiences. One thing that strikes me odd is that I continually get asked, how do you feel about that? As if there's some, you know, baggage or negativity attached to some kind of, you know, ill will or something. And I personally don't have any. I truly feel blessed. And yes, you know, I process through my birth mother and father not wanting me. And you know, of course, there's a variety of reasons behind that, and each case is unique. But how lucky am I that my adoptive parents took me, raised me, gave me a fabulous life? I see it as a very, very positive experience. Now, I was able to find my birth mother about 12 years ago. I'm 50 now. And I met her 3 or 4 times. I did not feel the connection like one of your guests there had mentioned, but it was fantastic to meet her, and it kind of made the whole story come full circle. I felt really at ease and at peace now, and had no other questions about, you know, where I came from or did I fit anywhere or anything like that. So I really embraced it, and I hope everyone can really, you know, find the positive. I, as you mentioned, have, you know, free agency to choose any which way I want, and for me it's a very positive experience.
Well, good to hear, and thank you. It's certainly heartwarming to hear all these positive experiences, though. Sean Ramsey, I think you mentioned you read Betty Jean Lifton, who talks about the feelings of being cherished but also feeling of abandonment.
Yeah, when I first, I think my birth mother actually sent me 2 Betty Jean Lifton's books, and I think Journey of the Adopted Self was the first realization that being adopted and the life you live as an adoptee is a shared experience. And I read that book just seeing myself in almost every page, saying, how does this woman know so much about me, when actually she just was very well researched and interviewed a lot of adoptees and found we all have a very shared, in some ways, in many ways, a shared experience.
But there's also the advantage, Sarah Bernard. I mean, when you learned of, it's sad that you didn't get to know your birth mother, because they could have had that relationship that the others here have had, but you learn things medically that are important. I mean, that's why closed adoptions were kind of foolish in retrospect, because it would be impossible to get the records, and you would need those medically to know. How did it affect you to find out your mother was bipolar?
Well, in a way, it helped answer the question, why couldn't you keep me? You know, she was college educated and all, and could, you know, she was independent living, and actually surrounded herself with teens later in life. She worked at a community theater and, you know, called them my kids. So she had an affinity for children. But the bipolar thing was like, ah, yeah, you're just messed up. you really can't have a kid. And that helps me get it, you know, in that other way.
Let me read some of your emails here. Here's a listener writes, we adopted a girl from Korea when she was 4 months old. My wife is Korean heritage, which helps with the cultural and appearance issues. I'm a white guy. She's 6 now. From the start, we told her she was adopted, even before she could understand what that meant. When she asks, we tell her biological mother, who was never identified, was very young and couldn't take care of her and loved her so much, she wanted her to grow up with someone who would love her forever. We tell her we're her forever mom and forever dad. I wonder whether your guests think about this approach and whether they have any further suggestions, particularly how to respond the first time she gets mad and says, you're not my real mom and dad.
I think that...
Janelle.
I think that if you think that you can find your adoptive parents, there's always this, you're not my real mom and dad thing. But I think that honestly... adolescents are going to do whatever kind of cuts to the quick the most. And with adoption, that's just an easy card to play. But I do think that it's great that they adopted a child who will have some physical resemblance. I do think that it's important to allow the child to know about where they came from, but what their current culture is and their current family. That's your real family.
What about the way each of you found out that you were adopted? I mean, in retrospect, was it well done by your parents?
Yeah. Absolutely. Sarah? Yeah, my parents, I think like this, that email, they were telling me from birth that you're chosen, you're special, this and that. When I was four, on my fourth birthday, they got one of those blank journals and wrote me the story of my adoption and put photographs in it of, you know, them going to the agency and bringing me home in my first bedroom and all that stuff. So I had the story of my life given to me in a book.
And
so that was cool.
Sean or Laura, just in terms of the way it was handled?
Well, I was also told at a very young age, as long as I could remember, I was told I was adopted. And I remember I also had the children's book, Are You My Mother? And for me, it kind of helped my imagination run wild as far as, well, I know that this woman who's taking care of me, she says she's not my mother, but she is my mother, but that I'm adopted, that means someone else is my mother. So is someone in this book my mother? And so I read that book all the time from a very young age, just looking at it and going, you know, I remember even in my teens, I'd look at it once in a while and, you know, my imagination really ran wild as far as who I could have been placed with. You know, it's just sort of the luck of the draw, you know, like George Lucas adopted three kids. Well, it doesn't quite fit with my timing, but how different would have been to be adopted into it just by luck of the draw into a different family and which way your life goes.
Well, Janelle, didn't you have royalty fantasies when you were a kid?
Oh, yeah. Especially because I knew that I could never really know who my biological parents were. And I always grew up thinking someday my mother is the princess of the world and she's going to come and find me and we're going to, you know, ride off into the sunset and I'm going to be happy and live in a palace. And I think that if you don't know, it's easy for your pre-adolescent mind and imagination to run away with things and just build up these worlds that, I mean, I was ready that any day now they were going to fly their jet in and come and get me and everything would be fine.
Well, here's another kind of story from a listener named Jennifer who says, unfortunately, I will have to listen to this discussion after the fact because I have a meeting at airtime. However, it would be interesting to discuss those adoptees like myself who have found one or both of their birth parents and were only rejected again. In fact, I found my birth mother at the age of 20 and was told to leave her alone. I found her again 15 years later, only to be told once again that she would not reunite. As much as I want information, particularly detailed medical information, the rejection is too painful. I'm a woman without a history, and it is so incredibly unfair and cruel. Years of therapy have helped, but the pain of rejection will always be there. It is undeniable, and the pain invades so many areas of my life. Another web comment. Thank you so much for having this discussion. As an adoptee in the state of California, I feel like a victim of its closed adoption system. I have no access to a family medical history, and as a result, I can't make informed decisions around prevention, such as was mentioned in the story before about breast cancer. My doctors have no clues or insights to current medical issues, unlike others who benefit from this information. It really adds a whole other level of anger and loss at not knowing one's origins as one ages or considers starting their own biological family. Another comment on our website. I was adopted by an amazing couple in Modesto, California in 1967. My parents raised me to believe that God gave me to them as a gift and that we were always meant to be together. I was never curious. I never felt different, and the subject rarely surfaced. When I was 21, my parents had a friend who had recently been reunited with her son and had a joyful reunion. They wanted me to know that if I ever wanted to have this experience, that I should never worry about betraying them, that I would always be their daughter. To this day, I cry thinking of this moment as I just don't feel the need to find my biological parents. My cup is full. Let me go to more of your calls, and we'll bring in a caller from Menlo Park. Diane, welcome.
Hi. You know, I'm also one of these people who had a closed adoption in California. I'm in my 40s, and about 6 or so years ago, I met my birth mother, and I had to go through a private detective to find her. I tried going through the counties, but because of the closed nature, and also it turns out that the information that they gave in the parent description was somewhat fictional. It made it impossible for me personally to find her on my own. So I'm at great expense. I looked for them. And it was really strange for me because after the first hour or so of conversation, I realized that a closed adoption is really convenient for the birth parents, and it's convenient for the adoptive parents, but it's so self-serving. It's not really serving the adopted at all.
No, it doesn't. In fact, Laura, how did you get beyond? You were closed adoption, right?
That's right. And when I told my parents that I wanted to search, they gave me the papers that they had.
Oh, they had the papers. Yeah.
They had some. Yeah. It was just a start. I had to go through a search process. And like the caller, I ended up having to hire someone to help me ultimately find both my birth mother and my birth father.
It can be so frustrating, though. I mean, lucky. And I thank the caller. Diane, I'm glad you joined us. Let me bring Liz in as another caller from Albany. Hi, Liz.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm an adoptive mom with a little boy from Guatemala. And I wanted to ask Janelle to elaborate, if you could please, on your comment that you make people work for the information, because obviously I'm Caucasian, I'm older, he's brown, you know, and people do ask questions. And I'd love to know what some of your ways of having them kind of, just having them work for it.
Well, my ways are completely self-serving and for my own amusement. I work in a restaurant and people, they kind of look at me funny, and then they kind of talk to each other, and they say awkwardly, can we ask you a question? I say, of course. And they say, where are you from? And I respond, Pennsylvania. They don't know what to do with that. So this follows, where is your mother from? I say, she's Swedish, and my father's from South Dakota. And they still don't know what to do with this information until finally someone says to me, what is your ethnicity? And at that point, I say, oh, well, I'm part Vietnamese, and I'm part Caucasian, and I was adopted. And then they have, there's a great sense of relief on their part that they have finally figured out the mystery of why I look like I do.
Do you find this inevitably or invariably rude of people? Or, I mean, because you could say, they're just curious, maybe they're trying to make a connection with you, establish some rapport.
I realize that it's coming from a place of curiosity and interest, and that's definitely a positive thing. As a kid, I really, really hated it. As an adult, I just like to amuse myself by giving them the correct answers, but not the answers that they're looking for.
Does that help, Liz?
How would you deal with it as a kid? Looking back, do you have strategies for kids that you would recommend?
I guess looking back, I was just I've always been very frank, and I would just answer, I was adopted, I'm half Vietnamese, and that's how I got here. My mother gave me up. The McCormicks picked me. And I always use the word, I was picked, uh-huh, as opposed to I was adopted, because being picked sounds better than being adopted.
Being selected even.
Yes.
Sounds, yeah, thank you for the call. And we'll bring another caller on. John, join us. Hi.
Hi. I'm also calling as an adoptive parent. We adopted our daughter Casey from a Polish orphanage when she was 14 months old. And, you know, as adoptive parents, my wife and I were always very open about Casey's adoption. But we also wanted to protect her from more hurt. And she flourished through life, but tragically, at the age of 17, 4 years ago, Casey took her life.
No, sorry.
She jumped off the Golden Gate Bridge. Mm. And it wasn't until, you know, after the fact, and writing, you know, a book about my experience that I got to the root of her downfall. And she never expressed any interest in her past. And we've heard that from other adoptees as well. And that's something that adoptive parents always balance between, you don't want to, you don't want your child to experience any more hurt, but you want to be open. And it was really only after Casey's suicide and after interviewing a number of adoption experts that I realized how much, her experience, her early experience of abandonment and, in her case, institutionalization, you know, had probably been stuffed down. Despite her stoicism, we now believe that her past probably weighed pretty heavily on her. And in ways that maybe she didn't even understand herself. And I think that probably goes for other adoptees as well.
John, forgive me, and I'm so sorry for your loss, but how old was Casey when you adopted her?
She was 14 months when we adopted her. She had spent about a year in a Polish orphanage. And the orphanage was wonderful. The staff was wonderful. But there's a whole system, I believe, from the adoption agency to the orphanage caregivers to, frankly, the post-adoption care that fails these children. In the Bay Area, an area of 7 million people, there are a handful of adoption therapists, but there are tons of adoption providers.
I thank you for that call. And again, I'm sorry for your loss. Janelle, were you in a Vietnamese orphanage for very long? Or?
Yes, and I lived with a foster family also. I do know that my foster father was a taxi driver. And I know that when I was flown back then, the adoptive parents don't have to go to the country of origin. So I was delivered to my parents, and my parents said that when we were the last people off the plane, and the nurse or whoever brought me said that I cried the entire way. And that is a long flight. Mm-hmm. And it was nonstop crying. And my father joked, said, you pretty much cried for the first 5 years of your life.
How is, being adopted affected a sense of identity or a search for identity? Let me ask that to each of you or any of you who want to step up to the plate here and respond to it. Laura?
Adoptions had a profound impact on my sense of identity, and I think on some level I've always been trying to figure that out and piece that story together. Again, for me, for many years, from being very young until I ended my engagement and decided to do this search, I wasn't consciously thinking about identity issues, but in the looking back at the choices that I've made and how I've lived my life, I can see that issues that, again, for me and my view that are rooted in my being adopted have had a huge impact.
Central.
On who I am, absolutely foundational. And I've been, I think it, how I've held all of that is that I need to go out and really think about and decide who I am. And that doesn't mean it's a rejecting of anything necessarily, but it's just this very conscious process.
A process is still in the works.
Absolutely.
Yeah. How about you, sir?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I feel that it's every single day is putting another piece of the puzzle together. And as far as having children, like, I wonder if that is something that if I were to ever decide to have children, even though I feel fairly strongly that I don't want to duplicate the defects, as they say, of bipolar disorder or something like that. I wonder if that would, that would definitely take it to another level as far as identification. So it's any decision you make is bringing something else to the surface that you've been dealing with or haven't had a chance to deal with yet.
And Sean?
Well, for me, my identity as it was being formed growing up, I really, looking back, I see that I was really acting out of gratefulness and loyalty to my adopted parents, and so I was very quiet, and I was the good kid, and I didn't make any waves. I have an older brother who's also adopted, who is the opposite, who basically never did a single thing. My parents told him pretty much from the time he was 14 on, and so each formed our identity in a different way. But for me, after that period of time, I realized I didn't really form in my own identity until much later, because I was living the life that I thought my parents thought they were adopting, you know, the kid they thought they were adopting. I was trying to fill those shoes. And so I kind of, you know, my identity was more of a pleaser to them, you know, and thinking of what they wanted more than myself. And it wasn't until much later in my 20s when I started actually even recognizing that I wanted to do my own thing. And that's when I really felt like I started, you know, living my own life.
By contrast, though, Janelle, it sounds like you don't seem that much of an influence here on your life, on your identity.
No, I think that when you're adopted, you kind of get a clean slate. You don't have you always hear you have for other people here. You have your mother's eyes, you have your father's ears, whatever. Adopted kids don't have any of that. So we have I feel like I have no groundwork for what my identity is, because I'm so very physically different from everybody, from my entire family. So you kind of get to start over and decide who you're going to be, because you're not born into any sort of hereditary lineage to your family. So you get to be a pioneer.
Well, I thank all of you for being here, the Awesome Pioneer, and all the other guests who've been with us this hour, Janelle, Sean, Laura, Sarah, thank you so much for sharing your stories, and thank you for being a part of this forum program. This is all part of our ongoing series, In My Experience, and you can continue this discussion on our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on the segment, or on our Facebook page. We're here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, with an hour repeat at 10 to 11 in the evening. I want to thank our senior editor, Dan Zoll, and our producers, Judy Campbell and Christina Russo. Our engineer is Danny Bringer, and our executive producer is Raul Ramirez. And for all of us here at KQED Public Radio, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg.